Welcome to Leaders and Legends of Online Learning, a podcast dedicated to the experts. Thank you for listening. Each episode, we'll be learning from the world's leading thinkers and practitioners in online learning and linking to ideas relevant to online teaching, working with online learners, and digital education. You can listen to the experts and check their profiles and link to some of their work on our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com. I'm Mark Nichols, the interviewer in this episode. You'll meet Emeritus Professor Junhong Zhao in this episode. Junhong has had an extensive career with the Open University of Shantou in China, and his international publications include a major contribution to the Springer Handbook of Open Digital Distance Education and many contemporary themes of online learning. This podcast is sponsored by the International Council for Open and Distance Education, ICDE, the leading global membership organization working towards bringing inclusive, quality education to all. By joining the ICDE Global Network of Flexible and Distance Learning, you can help transform the world through inclusive education. Become a member or find out more by visiting www.icde.org. It's my pleasure to be talking with Emeritus Professor Junhong Zhao with the Open University of Shantou, Shantou Radio and Television University in China. Junhong's research interests cover various aspects of open, distance, and digital education. He's published widely in both Chinese and English journals for an international audience. Junhong, it's wonderful to be talking with you.
Me too. Thank you for the opportunity.
Not a problem. Can we start with a brief overview of your career and publications?
Yeah, sure. Well, I started my career as a teacher of English some 40 years ago in 1983, after graduating from college. I had an excellent school record, so I was given a teaching position at my alma mater as an assistant because I didn't have any degree, right? And at that time, my research interest was focused on linguistics and applied linguistics. Mm-hmm. After teaching 5 years at this college in 1988, I joined the Open University of Shantou, which is a local branch of the Open University of China. Mm. At the time, it was called China Central Radio and Television University. I continued to research and write as a linguist until 2000, when I decided to shift my research interest to open and distance education, to ODE.
Yeah.
Because an opportunity came in that year when I happened to learn that the China Scholarship Council, a non-profit organization funded by the Chinese central government, accepted individual applications for overseas academic visits. Mm. So I submitted my application immediately with a research proposal on ODE in the UK.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I didn't have much confidence because I was at the lowest level higher education in China. And I didn't have a very strong educational qualification.
Mm.
And so it took me quite a while to believe I was among the lucky few winners. And needless to say, the OUK was the destination of my choice.
Yeah.
So learning from my experience as a researcher of linguistics and applied linguistics, I knew the first thing to do when stepping into a new field of inquiry was a systematic study of its foundational theories and seminal works.
Yeah.
So during my stay at the OEUK from 2001 to 2002, mm-hmm. as a visiting research fellow, I read a lot of literature on ODE theory and research, and met a lot of ODE researchers and writers for advice, and reflected a lot on the directions for my future research. This was my first opportunity with the international ODE community, an experience, well, obviously has produced a lifelong impact on my career.
Mm.
I published my first English ODE research paper in 2005, co-authored with two other colleagues. And in the past 2 decades, I've been serving as an active reviewer for journals and conferences, and have been on the editorial boards of numerous journals.
Mm.
For example, in 2013, I was invited to be on the editorial board of Distance Education, and the following year, on the editorial board of System, an international journal of Educational Technology and Applied Linguistics. Mm-hmm. You know, these two are high impact journals, listed on the Social Sciences Citation Index. And from 2014 to 2022, I was associate editor of Distance Education. And in 2021, I joined Professor Yingshen Jun from the International Christian University in Japan and Professor Olaf Zawaki Ritter from the Oldenburg University, Germany.
Yeah.
I joined these two professors as co-editors of the Springer Brief in Open Education series. And now I'm the editor of the series. And my involvement with another journal, Distance Education in China, deserves a few more words. Distance Education in China is a peer-reviewed Chinese journal published by the Open University of China. In 2013, I was commissioned to launch and chair its international forum, which later turned into a regular feature of the journal. And I had sole responsibility for everything, from identifying and inviting colleagues around the world to contribute and reviewing submissions and giving feedback to translating accepted papers and writing a scholarly commentary for each paper. Mm-hmm. This was a timely window through which many Chinese OD researchers and practitioners learned what their international counterparts were doing. Mm. So it was a huge success. From March 2013 to July 2022, for 9.5 years, 121 papers contributed by 155 researchers from 28 countries were published in the journal. Mm. In fact, later it became a very popular feature of the journal, and all the papers were very popular in the Chinese OD community. In my 40-year career, in addition to over 150 translations, I have also published about 150 journal papers and book chapters, most of which are in the field of ODE. My publications also include monographs, edited volumes, and textbooks. And I'm particularly proud to be involved in the publication of the Handbook of Open, Distant, and Digital Education, one of Springer's major reference works, edited by Professor Olaf Zawaki Ritter and Professor Yingshen Jun. I'm the editor of the first section, History, Theory, and Research. And contributors to this section include many key figures in the field. For example, Michael Moore, Martin Weller, Terry Anderson, Stephen Downs, John Zhong, and so on. So this is a very brief overview of my professional life.
It's a very, very effective career. That the Springer book is certainly a fantastic reference. Junhong, I'm just conscious that many listeners may not be aware of the scale of distance education and online education in China at the moment. So you mentioned that you work for the Open University of China. Do you know how many students the Open University of China serves each year?
Over 1 million. Over 1 million.
I just thought it would be good to have that in the recording. So clearly, Junhong, your work has spanned over two decades. You've published, as you mentioned, over 150 items in your corpus. What are some of the ideas and themes that your work has provided that you sense are very pertinent today?
My research in the first 20 years of my career was focused on linguistics and applied linguistics. And since the early 2000s, all my publications have centered on ODE. And embedded in my ODE research is the philosophy that ODE is not equivalent to technology-based education or technology-enhanced education. In my mind, technology-based education is but one form of ODE. Of course, I'm not saying that I'm against the use of technology in education. No, not at all. I'm not a Luddite. I'm not a technophobe. Okay, what I want to emphasize is it is not necessarily the case that technologies which are more advanced, more cutting edge, or more expensive are better suited for ODE. I think this is a very important point, a point which remains particularly pertinent today. And in my eyes, education should be of humans, by humans, and for humans.
Mm.
Because education is a purely human enterprise. So we must do our best to ensure equity in education, which will consequently contribute to social justice.
Mm.
Yeah, it is true that technology is essential to education, and no one can deny this fact, right? However, its role, the role of technology in education, shouldn't be over-exaggerated or taken for granted, as it is now by many people. This is especially true when it comes to ODE. There is no ODE without technology. However, we cannot over-exaggerate its role, right?
Mm.
So equity in education and social justice are two key themes in my publications in recent years, especially since the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic, which, as we all can see, has made inequality, inequity, and injustice in education much more conspicuous than ever.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I had two publications in 2021 which highlighted these themes. One was published in the Asian Journal of Distance Education, and the other was a chapter to the Handbook of Research on Emerging Pedagogies for the Future of Education. In these two publications, I examine education in the context of the United Nations 2030 Agenda through the lens of social justice. I argue for a caring, inclusive, and equitable approach to education instead of purely online education as the new normal for the post-COVID-19 era.
Mm.
That is, education should first and foremost embody care, inclusion, and equity. Technology is a means, not an end. Technology can surely contribute to equality, but technology alone cannot bring about equity and social justice, because no technology can cater for learners in all contexts.
Mm.
In another paper published in Open Praxis last year, I critiqued sustainable openness of technology-based education from the perspective of cost effectiveness and accessibility. I argue technology-based education cannot be sustainably open to all without cost effectiveness and accessibility. That is, technology-based education must be cost-effective not only to educational institutions, but also to individual learners alike, and cater for socio-cultural disparity and diversity, among other things, so that it can be opened up to all in a sustainable manner. So to this end, technology-based education must be able to deliver the goals of enhanced quality, cost-effectiveness, and accessibility at the same time. And in my latest paper, also published in Open Praxis, the one you just mentioned, right, I examine literature on the affordances of AI for all use in terms of quality, access, and cost. That is through the lens of I triangle. Given that we have yet to see large-scale, robust evidence of the effective contribution of AI to the educational quality of all youth, and more importantly, in my opinion, more importantly, at costs affordable both to all youth as institutions and to their learners as individuals. So I argue blind adoption of AI at this stage cannot help all youth regain their past glory in the 21st century. As we know, today, education is increasingly technologized.
Mm.
So issues such as sustainability, openness, equity, justice, affordability, cost effectiveness, accessibility, these issues are as important as quality improvement, if not more important.
Mm.
Not to mention that the effectiveness of technology-based education is at best mixed. There is no conclusive evidence, right? So I think this seems remains particularly important. And since last year, I've been invited to write guest features for the e-newsletter of Open University Malaysia, which is called Inspired. I can write whatever I like, so far as the topic is relevant to ODE in Asia. So I like the challenge. For example, in one feature, I wrote about the necessity for Asian ODE researchers to master the English language so that they can both benefit from and contribute to the international knowledge base of ODE research. I learned this from the case of my experience with Chinese colleagues. Many of them cannot use English language to communicate with the international colleagues or to read English literature, so they are always left behind. So this is the topic of one of my features. And in another, I made a case for the kind of ODE leaderships that we need in Asia. I have two kinds of ODE leaderships in mind for Asia. One is intellectual leadership, that is, Asian ODE researchers whose work is internationally recognized and has been integrated into the international community of ODE. And the other is intellectual calmed institutional leadership, that is, leaders of Asian ODE institutions should also be leaders of intellectual leaders of ODE. I think this echoes your views in your chapter to Dan's book.
Yes.
Your title is A Scholarly Voice as an Executive, right? So I think it's also a very important point. And in my latest feature, just published last week, well, I advocate a context-sensitive approach to edtech research and practice in Asia. We in Asia cannot simply buying in whatever technological innovations invented outside our local context. We need to have a very context-sensitive approach to contextualize those exotic innovations, right? I think my work in these areas is very important.
Absolutely. So just to pick up on three terms that you used, so clearly technology is foundational to how education operates. But what I hear you saying is much more important is making sure that that education is open and accessible. And the quality is also a component. But the technology doesn't drive anything. The technology enables the sort of openness of education that, that you think is very important. And I can't help but endorse that so warmly. So the online tools then, the online is just the mechanism. What really counts is how you design that education to make sure that it's accessible for others. At the moment, we start of 2024, there is a whole lot of interest now in artificial intelligence, which you've just recently written on. I think the objectives that you've talked about for education to become more open and accessible are just as pertinent. What are some of your observations about online learning and education at the current time? What are some of the things that we need to perhaps keep an eye on or emphasize?
I think, as we know, online learning has become part and parcel of campus-based higher education. However, it is not uncommon that people simply digitalize the learning contents and activities or moved face-to-face classroom activities online and called it online education. Neither is it uncommon that the design and delivery of online learning is not informed by any relevant theories or draws upon decades of research by dedicated ODE professionals. This is my first observation. And my second observation is the trend of technology-driven or technology-led reform on education. Nowadays, educational reform has turned into a race for new technology. Each new generation of technology just ignites a new craze for educational reform. It seems that all the educational problems have their technological fix. Surely, technology is essential to education, and especially in the 21st century. However, it is not right to accept that the more advanced, the more cutting edge, the more expensive the technology used by a school in its learning and teaching, the more likely it is to enhance its educational quality and to provide more educational opportunities for more people. Mm. This is the logic of what I called the newer, the costlier, and the better. Mm. Following this logic, what people are doing now seems to be to reform education so that it is fit for the purpose of a particular new technology, say in the past year for generative AI.
Yeah.
The use of newer and newer technology in education is now commonly taken for granted.
Mm.
So in this case, education must be reformed each time when a new technology is invented or developed, so that this particular technology will be or can be used in education. Clearly, this is using technology in education for the sake of technology, not for the sake of education, but putting the cart before the horse. Because if we want to transform education for the better, well, we must first of all find out what problems need fixing in education in a particular socio-cultural context, and whether these problems cannot be fixed by human educators alone. If a problem cannot be fixed by human educator alone, which technology has the affordances to fix it? And if there are more than one technologies that can be used to fix it, which one is more effective, more affordable, and more accessible? And if a problem can be fixed by human educators and technology alike, then which intervention, human or technological, is more affordable, more effective, more accessible? In a word, reform, any reform, should center on education itself rather than fitting education around technology.
Yeah.
This is the trend of technology-driven reform. And finally, in terms of research, I have another observation. The current landscape of OD research features too many isolated, one-off, short-duration pilot studies in idealized environments. Findings from these studies may apply to the particular event or intervention, but are not likely to be generalized to a wider scale and may also be biased.
Yeah.
Because the effectiveness of an educational intervention needs to be tested over time. Instant effectiveness may turn out to be no more than an illusion. As we know, what is seen or experienced at the first stage of an intervention may prove to be radically different from the reality. If the intervention continues long enough, involving different learners and teachers in different learning environments with different learning objectives and different domains of knowledge. So we need to have more longitudinal, large-scale, iterative research. I don't mean that these observations are universally equally true, but at least it is the case in my context. And I guess they may exist to different extents in different parts of the world.
Yes. So it kind of leads on to the next question the researcher would most like to see, but a longitudinal study of what's effective would seem to be a very, very good research publication to read about. Are there any other studies that you'd really like to see published in journals?
Well, first of all, let me be clear. What I'm not very interested in seeing, I'm not very interested in seeing publications reporting on this is what I did to my course and it worked really well. To be honest, yes. Especially as an editor and reviewer, I'm fed up with this kind of studies. Well, I most like to see macro and meso level OD research, which, according to the Handbook of Open, Distant and Digital Education, includes OD theories and systems, as well as institutional perspectives, management and organization, rather than micro level learning and teaching. You know, this is I'm glad that we have a consensus among the colleagues from the Center for Open Education Research at the University of Oldenburg. We are going to launch a new journal with an exclusive focus on macro and meso level OD research. The inaugural issue is expected to go online this summer. Inspired and informed by my 35 years experience as an OD practitioner, researcher, reviewer, and editor, in a recent article published in Lotto, I identified and examined 10 critical issues which I argue have long existed and may have a detrimental impact on the healthy growth of the field. Put specifically, and put another way, I'd also look forward to seeing publications of longitudinal research, scaling up and generalization research, research reporting failures rather than overwhelmingly favoring success over failure.
Absolutely.
And research adopting a systems approach, not isolated pilot study. Research adopting a socio-cultural approach that is context sensitive. And research adopting a humanized rather than highly technologized approach. You see, today, more and more research relies on the use of sophisticated software as instrument for data mining, collection, and analysis. And the researchers simply, come to any conclusion based on these so-called scientific objective statistics.
Yeah,
I don't like that. And I'd also like to see publications on ODE research, on ODE theory, ODE history, ODE policy. And importantly, I especially look forward to seeing research on ODE for the underprivileged and the disadvantaged.
Junhong, you mentioned earlier you spent some time with the Open University learning some of the foundational theories of open distance education.
Yeah.
You've mentioned the Iron Triangle, which I think comes slightly after that period. But what are some of the foundational theories that have most inspired you and remain with you today as you continue your online learning practice?
In a recent article published in the American Journal of Distance Education, which is revisiting Michael Graham-Moore's theory of transactional distance implications for its relevance to ODD in the 21st century, something like this. I examined this theory and try to critique the relevance of Michael's transactional distance theory, how to use it in today's open distance and digital education. And of course, it is not the only theory. Like the community of inquiry framework is also very, very relevant today.
Yeah.
And I think many classic theory, like the guided didactic conversation.
Yes, Holmberg,
is also very pertinent today. They can be used to inform the design of online learning.
Well, Junhong, to close, two people you'd recommend as legends of online learning, one whose work or perspective is significantly influencing you now, and someone else who you think might otherwise have an important perspective to share.
Well, there are many people whose work has influenced me significantly because, in a sense, I was a latecomer to the field. So, but I think of these people, Michael Moore deserves a special mention because it was his textbook, Distance Education, A Systems View, which was published in 1996, the first edition. This was the first book I read when I went to the OUK in 2001. And it was this book that stimulated my interest in ODE. Well, however, like some other people who have influenced me significantly, Michael has been interviewed by you.
Yes.
So another colleague who has influenced me most significantly is John Bagley, emeritus professor at the Center for Distance Education at Athabasca University.
Yeah.
John's writings are never sort of sub-observations of online learning and online education, as well as illuminating insights into ODE. However, some people might not be very pleased with his writing style, saying that he is too sarcastic or too critical. But in my eyes, this is because of his deep love for the field. I'm sure John will have a lot to say and share if he is available for your interview. From 2008 John wrote 18 reflections for distance education, mm-hmm. starting with where did distance education go wrong? I'm sure he had a lot to say and share. Mm. And another person I would like to recommend is Neil Selwyn. Neil Selwyn at Monash University. Mm. Some people tend to think Neil is against digital education, which I don't agree. My understanding is Neil has been advocating sensible and responsible uses of digital technology or new technologies in education, mm. constantly cautioning us against the hype of digital education. Mm. I enjoy reading his works very much, and I think an interview with Neil will prove to be a welcome addition to your program.
Mm, very good choices. Xuanhong, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for all of your scholarship and all that you're doing to advance online open distance education. And thank you so much for being a leader and legend of online learning.
Thank you for the opportunity again, and nice talking to you.
You can read more about Xuanhong and his work from our website. That concludes this episode. Be sure to go to our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com, to follow up on this episode's guest. You'll also find links to others whose ideas continue to inspire and teach online learning professionals, and you can subscribe to future interviews. If you know of a leader or legend we've not yet talked to, please do drop us a line at onlinelearninglegends@gmail.com.